This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, let's go to the hotline. On the line right now, Odyssey NFL Insider Ross Tucker. Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. Mayo game day be delicious.
How'd I do?
I would say like a 9.
Okay.
There was a certain, like, you took it like an octave higher or lower, I guess. Mayo. You know what I mean? Like, I appreciated the concerted effort to show additional enthusiasm.
What do I need to do to get to a 10, Ross? We've been doing this 3 weeks now. What needs to be done for me to get to a 10 on that read?
I don't know. It's kind of like... We'll know it when you do it.
It's like porn. You know what I mean? Yeah, you know it when you see it. Right.
You know what's so funny? That's exactly what I was thinking, but I didn't know if I should say that or not.
That's all right.
And I know that's what, like, a judge famously said at one point.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to say that, so I'm glad you did.
Thank you.
No, just so Sean's strategy will be keep 20 tabs open on his computer and see which one he likes best.
That's exactly
just,
right.
He'll play all 20 of them all at once. You know, I guess the fitting one this week would have been something with Jerod Mayo, because the Texans face a Patriots team led by Jerod Mayo.
Damn it.
We could have cut him a royalty check for the live read. But look, Ross, this is a second week in a row the Texans are going against one of your former teams, and one that's, you know, a lot different than when you played for the New England Patriots. This is a team in transition. How much should the Texans fear the rookie debut by Drake May, you know, like the rookie QB? There's so many times various quarterbacks like Will Levis will come out and they'll have an incredible first performance because teams just don't know what to expect. And sometimes those guys end up being great. Sometimes they go down in flames. What's your feeling on Drake May and his potential for an awesome rookie debut?
You know, it's interesting. The fact that you bring up Levis, because I just got done. I know we usually talk on Tuesdays, but it's a Thursday. And I know you're a listener, Seth, but just got done talking with Greg Cosell for today's Ross Tucker Football Podcast. And the two things he said that I thought were really interesting are, number one, he said he thought he was the toolsiest quarterback in the draft. Meaning, you know, we know he was the third guy to go off the board, after Caleb Williams, after Jaden Daniels. But if you just stack up all the things that you're looking for in a quarterback, right, like size, speed, arm strength, all those things, I mean, he's bigger than Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels. He probably has a stronger arm. He's not faster than Jaden Daniels, but he's fast. Like, I don't know if you guys know that, but Drake May can run.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a legit athlete. And it is interesting to me that you brought up Will Levis, because, you know, you're right. When Levis got the job last year, he had some really impressive games out of the gate. Sometimes it's because the D coordinators don't really know how to scheme for him yet. I think sometimes it's because the offensive coordinators just pare the game plan down and really simplify it with, like, you know, one read plays, and a lot of times it works, you know, like the first read's open, the guy rips it, and you're like, oh, wow, okay, this guy's awesome. And then it's like, well, then once teams are taking away the first read, because right now I guess I would say the Texans defensively, they don't really know how the Patriots will use him and what the first read will be on some of these plays. So that's an interesting part. But the flip side, and Greg mentioned this, he's going into a terrible situation. I mean, they're a horrible team. They're, like, if you look, they're bottom five O-line and they're bottom five skill position. And I think an argument can be made that they're worst. Like, dead last in the league at both. Remember those commercials where, was it a commercial or a movie where they were like, young, dumb, and drunk is no way to go through life or something?
Oh, that was Animal House. That was Animal House. Yeah.
Yeah, so, let me just tell you.
Lutowski did die.
Group,
yeah.
Yeah, worst skill life. Position group and worst O-line is no way to put a rookie quarterback in. But that's what they're doing, so it's going to be entertaining.
Mr. Mayo, 0.0. Yeah. Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider, joining us. Insider calls brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase Hellman's at your local Walmart, Kroger, or grocery store to add extra deliciousness and creamy flavor to your game day dishes this football season. Ross, what are the Texans to you at this point, 5 games into the season? Where are they on the power rankings and the fact that they're 4-1 but have a negative point differential? Like, what do you see in the Texans so far, 5 games into the season?
Yeah, that game, it's funny because I was in a hotel in Kansas City, and so I had the red zone up on my laptop, but then in the hotel room, I had Texans Bills, mm-hmm. So get a chance to watch the whole game. That's the worst I've ever seen Josh Allen play, and so I don't know. You got to give the Texans defense at least a decent amount of the credit, right? I mean, I don't know if I'll give them all the credit for that, but they deserve a decent amount of the credit for making Josh Allen look that bad. I think my other takeaway, Sean, was that's a huge positive for the Texans defense. My other takeaway is feels like the Texans are kind of a different team without Nico Collins. You know, when they had him earlier in the game, it just felt like they were really rolling and, okay, here we go. And then after he was out, it seemed like they were lacking something on offense. They had those turnovers that were obviously costly, but they ended up finding a way to win the game, which is the best news out of the whole thing, right? You know, you have all that stuff go wrong, you lose Collins, you have the turnovers, but you still win, which I think is encouraging. And I think they're still not firing on all cylinders, which is probably why it's a good time to play the Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
That's it's funny. Sean and I were like quadruple checking our facts this morning because every team in the NFL, the fan base is convinced that their offensive coordinator runs the ball on first down way too much. Like that's just it's 32 teams. The Texans are the prime example of that, where I just get flooded with people telling me every week, Seth, they call a run every single first down. The Texans actually pass the ball on first down more frequently than any other team in the league. They're 70% of the time they on first down, they're passing the ball, and yet they're just so bad at running the ball that that's what sticks in people's brains. I don't even fault them for it. They cannot run the ball effectively. And Ross, what? I mean, I feel like they've made progress in some regards, and yet I look up at the end of the game and Ogunbowale's averaged 2 yards per carry in the game. Cam Akers had more success. Like, from you watching last week's game, where are they in the run game right now?
They're not in a good spot, and it's surprising because when you have the receivers that they have, there's absolutely no way that they should be struggling as much as they are, because they were running it better earlier with Mixon. And yeah, I think Mixon and Pierce are probably better than Akers and Dare, but I'm still a little surprised that they struggled as much as they did, because they were getting a decent amount of two safety looks, right? Like,
yeah,
that is absolutely where they should have been able to run the ball. They need to, and Slowick knows it, right? Slowick knows they can't possibly have the offense they want to have if they can't run it when they're getting the two deep safety looks.
Ross Tucker joining us here. He's our Odyssey NFL insider. Ross, the big news this week, the Jets firing Robert Saleh. Aaron Rodgers was resentful of anybody accusing him of being involved in the firing of Robert Saleh. Where are you on that? Are you buying Aaron Rodgers right now, saying he had nothing to do with this thing?
Well, so let's talk about that, right? Supposedly, Woody Johnson and Aaron Rodgers talked Monday night, on the phone. And then the next morning, Woody Johnson fired Robert Saleh. So both have said that they didn't talk about Robert Saleh. So I think you have to first decide whether or not you believe that. Okay?
Yep.
And then secondly, let's just take them at face value. Let's say we do believe them. Isn't that kind of weird? Like, isn't it weird yes. that the owner talks to the quarterback the night before and then fires the coach the next day but didn't mention it at all to the quarterback? I mean, you know, these guys, they really got to get their stories straight. You know what I mean?
Like, yes.
Because that doesn't sound real good either. Like, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me either.
You know what, Ross? I'm thinking back to various conversations. As I got to be an older player in the NFL, there would be times where, you know, maybe one of the scouts or maybe with a GM himself or somebody might just kind of, I don't know, approach me in a way that wasn't normal, but like just kind of almost, I could tell that they were trying to casually ask me about a player. And like, yeah, so how do you think this guy's coming along? And I'm like, oh, crap. They're trying to figure out whether to cut this guy or not. And I'm like, and they're not going to say that directly or anything, but they're asking questions to try to maybe see like something like positive about this guy that they're missing or something. So I feel like it does happen where owners and coaches, they know they don't want to put a player in a position where they're getting somebody fired. And because then you got all kinds of team chemistry and trust issues and everything. But I wonder if that's the most likely explanation, is that Woody Johnson had a talk with Aaron Rodgers, and in his mind, he's trying to figure out whether he should fire Robert Saleh or not. And he was maybe waiting for Aaron Rodgers to say something that could salvage Robert Saleh or not seal his fate. And without having a transcript of the conversation, we just don't know. It's just that the Jets have done everything to bend over backwards to Aaron Rodgers' will over the. I think that I at the very least, I feel comfortable that Rodgers could have saved Robert Saleh's job if he had wanted to, and he probably didn't. Does that seem fair?
You know, what I would say though, I think two things. Number one, I think. Aaron Rodgers is so sensitive to the notion that he would have anything to do with Saleh's being fired and knowing that that would be a bad look for him, that they went out of the way to say that it wasn't discussed at all, you know, which is just not believable, right? The other thing I think is that I'm starting to feel like maybe turning over the entire organization to a 40-year-old quarterback coming off a torn Achilles who's no longer a top 10 player at the position is not the best thing.
Might have been a bad strategy. Yeah.
Jets fans should blame Tom Brady for this yet again, for their misery in their life.
Anybody who's got a quarterback over 40 should be blaming Tom Brady.
Yeah, they're like, well, they're just trying to do the old Tom Brady thing. Yep. And just like we've seen with various coaches, you can't just always just do the old Tom Brady thing. It's not quite that simple.
Work that way. Our Odyssey NFL insider is Ross Tucker. Insider calls brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious. I kind of did it the same, so I'm expecting a 9 again on that, Ross, just on the way out here.
No, that was worse. That was worse.
Okay, good. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know why, but it was worse. That was like an 8.
Okay. All right. Well, at least I'm still like kind of in the upper reaches, but I've got some ideas as to how I can get to a 10. Someone's asking, is this going to be a season-long bit on how you read the promo? Until I get a 10, yes. This is going to be a bit. I need perfection. I strive for it in my life.
When you say someone's asking, that it's on the text line or something?
Yeah, it's on the text line. Yeah, oh, by the way, real quick, I know you got to bounce, Ross, but you'll like this. A Navy veteran texted us and said, over the weekend I was checking in on Navy versus Air Force. I found myself watching the entire game because of the pleasant call by Ross Tucker. Please give him some kudos when you all talk.
Oh, you know what? Ross. So first of all, thank you to that gentleman for his service,
yes,
and for the kind words. And Navy is legit, dude. This is the best Navy team in a long time. Navy and Army are both 5-0,
yeah,
and they both play Notre Dame this year. I'm telling you, I think one of them is going to beat Notre Dame. Maybe. I mean, they are good. Really
Ross,
good.
Ross, do you have 1 minute so I can say something else nice about you?
Yeah. Listen, it's like when someone comes up to me and they say, I'm so sorry to bother you, but I just love you on the radio. I always say the same thing, and it embarrasses my wife. I'm like, you're not bothering me. I love people that love me.
Yes.
I love
people. Yeah. Yes.
Sure, Seth. Tell me more how great I am. Please.
I got to say, I think one of the reasons people like you doing color commentary is that you just feel like an everyman. And I think a lot of people would be really, really, like, really surprised that you went to Princeton. And, but I feel like...
What does that mean?
I feel like especially, though...
Hey, can you stay for a backhanded compliment?
Listen, Ross,
that was a shot.
No, it's important for you.
Seth just said on the radio that I sound like a moron on TV, is what he just said.
No, if you want to do right by your alma mater, I'll tell you what, Princeton is taking a lot of hits right now because there's so many Menendez Brothers documentaries out. And in every single one of them, Lyle Menendez, Princeton attendee, looks like the dumbest rock in a box full of stupid rocks. It's a bad look for Princeton, all this Menendez stuff. And you're kind of counterbalancing that a little bit.
That is not where I saw
what
this going.
What are you even talking about right now?
Lyle Menendez is a bad look for Princeton, man. Those kids could have gotten away with that crime.
I didn't even know he went to Princeton.
Whatever. Oh, now you're whatever, Aaron Rodgers.
So I didn't hang out with him, and I don't care.
I heard you guys were always hanging out together on the quad.
Oh my god!
Or whatever they do there. Your dining clubs or whatever.
Hey Ross. Ross, can you stick around for a couple more backhanded compliments?
No. What people really like about me on TV is I sound like an absolute idiot. That's great. Thank you, Seth.
A lot of times, the backhanded compliment I'll get is people are like, I just like, yeah, like Ross, and yeah, you're like, Seth. I like Ross because he sounds like a slightly more sober version of you, Seth.
That's great. All right, Ross, we'll cut you loose, man. We'll talk to you next Tuesday.
See you guys.
All right, thanks, Ross Tucker. I was like, man, Seth, this is really nice. And then all of a sudden, just a total drive-by on Princeton is all that was. That's all that was. Seth had some Princeton guy chop his legs out back in 1996 in a college football game, and he's going to take it out on Ross Tucker 30 years later.
Honestly, I'm watching these Menendez brother things, and like Lyle Menendez, it's one of those classic things where... I don't want to get into the whole Menendez brother stuff.
Oh,
he did
God.
Some really stupid stuff in trying to cover up his crime to the point where you're like, I honestly was like, this is a really bad look for Princeton. Like the guy, they're showing his letters and like simple words are misspelled and everything. It's
That's tough. That's tough. The solid thing is interesting. The sense I get is Ross is not buying Aaron Rodgers. That's the sense I get. The most interesting thing to me about the Robert Saleh getting fired thing is, what if Greg Zuerlein makes that field goal against the Broncos in that game 2 weeks ago? In week four, they lost at home to, at the time, a very sad Denver Bronco team, 10-9. Totally unwatchable game. Horrible outcome, obviously, for the Jets. They lose 10-9 because Greg Zuerlein misses a field goal late in the game. He makes that field goal, they're 3-1. And even if they go and they lose in London to the Vikings in a competitive game, you're 3-2. The optics of firing a coach with an above 500 record this early in the season would have made it even stranger, and I think would have even put more smoke on Aaron Rodgers that he wanted it.
It almost feels like an in-season version of when the Broncos fired John Fox. Remember, like, John Fox went to an AFC championship game with the Broncos. And
went to a Super Bowl.
Went to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
The year before he got fired, they'd gone to the anyway.
Yeah, no, they were good all those years because he had Peyton Manning. You know, they were.
Yeah, and I want to say they went to the championship game the final year before the year he got fired or whatever. No, they went to the playoff. They had gone the year before, but they were like. But it was an aggressive move of like, okay, yeah, John Fox has done good things, but we want more. And I. Whether it's Aaron Rodgers directed or not, it feels like that's what Woody Johnson thinks he's doing. Is that, all right, this is a team that should be better. and they're not, but I feel like they could actually really make a push this year. We need something different. So whether that's influenced by Aaron Rodgers or not, it is just curious that it's also tied to when the laggard on that team right now is the offense, and the head coach was about to do something about making that better. He was going to demote the offensive coordinator. Yep. And that was the timing for when the guy got the guy gets fired. That's what's strange about it, is that Robert Saleh and his defense weren't the issue. Now, Robert Saleh, the head coach, had an underperforming offense as well.
Yeah.
But if Nathaniel Hackett, nobody respects Nathaniel Hackett as an offensive coordinator.
No.
I don't know if Nathaniel Hackett himself respects himself as an offensive coordinator.
He's got to be laughing that he's still getting these big paychecks, man.
He's just got the truck. Well, he's still making $50,000 a week from the Broncos.
Yes, right.
So, yeah, like he's loaded. And I think that this is like this, it's impossible not to think that, yeah, okay, Aaron Rodgers has a lot to do with this.
Yeah. I think too with that, you got to factor in Rodgers' age. If indeed let's pretend for a second that everybody's being truthful about this, that it was Woody Johnson's decision and Aaron Rodgers didn't directly say fire Robert Saleh. There's got to be an element too to Woody Johnson that says, man, this guy's 41 years old, our quarterback. The clock's ticking. You know, we can't burn a year. He's not 26. Like, we can't burn a year trying to find out if Robert Saleh and Aaron Rodgers are getting along. They know what the situation is between those two. It ain't perfect, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think that probably has something to do with it also.
John Fox had gone to the Super Bowl in 2013. In 2014, they made the playoffs with a 12-4 record.
Right, right.
And John Fox got fired with a 12-4 record.
Yep.
And it ended up being a good move. If you're going to judge it by Super Bowls, hey, it was the right thing to do. So I think that this is like an in-season version of that. Whether, no matter what the motivation was or whether or not Aaron Rodgers was involved, I kind of admire Woody Johnson for being that aggressive. It's just, okay, but what's the process, and, you know, who's actually steering the ship that the drama comes in?
Yeah, Gary Kubiak was a big beneficiary of that. He was Fox's replacement, wins the Super Bowl the next year. Largely with a defense. You know, that was Peyton. Peyton got replaced by Brock Osweiler at various points during that 2015 season.
I got to find if John Fox has ever done an interview about that. That's got to be a hard one. You know, he's sitting at home the next year feeling like, yeah, we could have done this. This is like, oh, come on.
Right, I could have done this. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Peyton and Pendergast with you, getting a bunch of texts. A lot of people critiquing my read on the Hellman's mayo thing. Thank you.
Mayo game day be delicious.
Yeah, they said I rushed it the last time. I don't know that I've got the energy to bring it every single time. I like bringing it that first time, and then I kind of just go back into the workshop.
I know sometimes when people aren't professional actors and they have a part, sometimes the director will tell the person specifically not to learn the lines by heart because you're not an actor, but you're going to try to like pretend you're an actor, and it ends up being worse than. So I wonder if somehow, Sean, are not a professional actor. You're a professional many things, but not an actor.
No.
So I think when you've got a scripted line, maybe it feels a little bit awkward.
I'm not a professional actor, and yet I've had several people, including one 2 days ago, come up to me and tell me that the video that I did, if you follow me on social media, you know about the video, when the Twins got knocked out of playoff contention and I acted like I had a relative that had died for about 30 seconds.
Oh, and they thought that I died.
No. They thought somebody died. They were like, oh, man. They were getting ready to send me a text saying how sorry they were. And then I just started cackling, laughing that it was the Twins' playoff chances that died. I had several people compliment me on my acting chops. I know you're right. I'm not a professional actor, but somewhere in there is a thespian, apparently, at least on these videos about them, you know, and things that move me, like the Minnesota Twins getting knocked out of the postseason.
I think, you know what it is with Ross, though? That's what it is with Ross. You feel like you're in an audition.
Yeah, a little
so
bit.
So it's that added element of, okay, you've got stress and pressure on you. He's judging you.
Should I add some production value around it? Like maybe some dramatic music around it or something like that?
I mean, let's do that.
At this point, I'm just kind of spitballing, you know?
Hey, Ben, when you're on your second job this afternoon, just go ahead and work on that for a while.
Yeah, just get
some production value to his Hellman's mayonnaise read.
Get working, Ben.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see here. Seth, this is all caps, 3 exclamation points. So this person really wants your opinion on something. Seth, since the O-line has no fight or push in the running game, wouldn't it be better to generate more gaps to run by leaving the zone scheme and running more counters and traps?
Yeah, they've
nerdy right there. I like
no,
it.
No. They've worked different things with some success and others without. I think with Damian Pierce in the game, that might be part more of the strategy. I think a lot of it has been that when they. I mean, not they're not running a spread offense or anything, but when they open it up a little bit, when they don't pretend that they're this big mashing football team in those types of plays, but where they just they loosen up the formation a little bit, they've created some space. But yeah, at the end of the day, they just don't have enough guys in either aspect, whether it's gap scheme or zone runs or anything, that are consistently blocking well, no matter what the style of blocking is. That's the frustrating part about it. So I think there's not a good answer. It's because it's just more reps, more reps, more reps. And then people say, what, you want them to run the ball more? And I'd just say to remind you, they're not running the ball on first down every time. They run the least... They're the lowest running team on first down in the NFL.
Yes.
So it's not like Bobby Slowick is sitting there and saying, like, no, we're going to run 50% of the time on first down no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
He's adjusting to what they're good and not good at. It's just glaring when they try to run on first down. That's why it feels like they're always running on the first down, because the ones that stick out in your mind are when they have failed runs and all of a sudden it's second and 10.
Yeah, they're not good at it. Anytime you do something poorly, it doesn't matter how much you're doing it. That and the penalties are what's holding back this offense right now.
Yeah.
The inability to get into good down and distance situations where you've got the whole playbook available to you.
And it's kind of interesting, too, because Cam Akers was running the ball well in that game, and yet they like Dare's dual threat ability, I think, and they still need to give Dare carries so defenses treat him honestly. And it worked. Like, the one... Twice in that game, they duped the defense when the defense was lined up, when the Bills defense was lined up with their simulated blitzes and the linebackers up right on the line of scrimmage. They just got Dare immediately out of the backfield and he was wide open because that linebacker couldn't get to him. So it's working to a certain degree. It's just that they're wasting all of these other carries and keeping the defense honest. They're getting what they need and keeping the defense honest, and yet they're also kind of wasting the down because they're not getting any productive yards out of it.
I just don't think they trust Cam Akers cut in time. I think that fumble he had that would have closed out that Bears game still sticks out to them. And I think there's a trust in Dare Ogunbowale, ironically, because he dropped a really crucial pass in the fourth quarter out in the flat.
Yeah.
But I just think they're perfectly happy with Dare running for 2 or 3 yards every time, knowing he's not going to put the ball on the ground.
They were, I would say, in pass protection, too. I think
yes,
they really trust him
definitely
there. So then again, when it comes to making that decision about whether to stay in and block or whether to go out on your route,
yeah,
CJ and Dare, they do some really kind of really good next-level stuff when it comes to CJ making very, very fast decisions based on what Ogunbowale is doing
yes
in pass protection
yes
or just releasing on a route. So that's what they like about him. I guess I would say I wouldn't say he's happy with the fact that Dare's not actually getting yardage as a runner, but that's a compromise they're willing to make right now.
Yeah, looking at the balance sheet, you're right. Compromise is the perfect way to put it. You're negotiating with yourself. You're like, all right, I know we're not getting any explosive runs, but we get all this other stuff.
And they ran a counter on that touchdown run to Cam Akers. It's not like they're not doing it's not like they're not running counters and powers and like at times they try to run duo, but they can't do it.
Yeah.
So, it's a yes. Yes, 100%. They got to figure out what they're good at. It's just, as Bobby Slowick said last week, they're running out of time to really develop and figure out what are we actually good at in the run game.
It's week 6 and you're heading into the meat of the schedule here after this game. You got Green Bay in Green Bay, you got a divisional game at home against the Colts, and then you got those 3 primetime games in a row. Like this is the jumping off point into the part of the schedule that's going to determine your season and how it goes, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I think, too, part of it is also, like, okay, Joe Mixon fixes a lot of issues without fixing any issues at all. Just the presence of Joe Mixon, knowing what he's good at and just calling what works for him. Hopefully it's as simple as that. It's just, when we as Texans fans have seen nothing out of Joe Mixon other than one really good regular season performance, a somewhat mediocre performance before he got injured in week two, and then he's been injured the rest of the time. There's zero part of me that says, like, oh, yeah, well, once Joe Mixon comes back, he'll be healthy the rest of the season, and then off to the races you go.
Yep. Here is C.J. Stroud on the importance of Dari Gumbawale and his role in the offense.
Yeah, Dari's been huge. You know, as you guys can tell, he's, you know, not only just a great running back, but also a good pass catcher, a great pass catcher, and, you know, does a lot of great things in pass protection as well. So definitely just, you know, I think he's just getting started as well. He'll have another great week, I feel. But yeah, he's been huge for us, definitely on third down. And, you know, I definitely feel he'll continue to do that for us.
See, CJ may as well have just said at the beginning of that cut, Seth is right, .. and then just said what he said right there. It echoed what you said. The pass protection thing is an underrated thing, I think, with Dari. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. People look at the box score and they go, hey, six catches, 57 yards, and the running wasn't that great. And pass pro kind of a big deal. Especially when you have an offensive line that's had some difficulties this year protecting CJ Stroud.
Right, yeah,
you know?
There's all kinds of stats with the offense right now where if you looked at it, you would think that, oh, yeah, they must be doing a pretty good job with their offensive line. And man, people have no appetite for it, and I get that. I understand it. But a lot of that has to do with the way the offense is dealing with imperfect pass protection.
Yeah.
That they're getting rid of the ball quickly more often than even when the protection's not right, or C.J. Stroud is making really nice plays under pressure. I mean, there's some of these pockets that he's working from are extremely tight pockets, and he's throwing dimes,
dude,
with guys in his lap. And some of those plays I was talking about with Dari were you would think Dari was supposed to pick up a blitz, but it's actually just like he's releasing immediately. CJ's throwing it to him, and it looks like, oh, wow, easy throw, wide open throw to Dari Gumbawale. You watch from the end zone, you realize, like, no, CJ had to arc that over an unblocked defensive end and just and kind of know that he's going to get some kind of contact. And it looks simple because CJ does such a good job of it.
Yeah, no doubt. Text message, if you guys discussed it already, I missed it, but who had Robert Saleh in the head coach death pool? That would be Seth Payne. Seth Payne had Robert Saleh as one of his
picks. Did not. Okay, I was after the show yesterday, I'm like, you know what? We always try to bring we try to be as petty as possible and bring as much raw emotion to this show as possible.
Yeah.
We try to be as unprofessional as possible and as immature as possible.
Right.
And I did not gloat a single bit about or just even act triumphant because I like Robert Saleh, and
right,
I feel like he got hosed a little bit. I feel like he's gotten hosed in a lot of regards since he's been the coach of the Jets. And I think he's overperformed, and yet people look at him like, well, you know, this guy's not the guy. And yet, as far as just looking at the situation for what it was going into the Jets season, it's that Nathaniel Hackett is not a good offensive coordinator. And this is and you've got a defensive minded head coach. No matter how good his defense is, he's going to be a fall guy for this. And that's exactly how it played out. That's why it's so hard to believe Aaron Rodgers saying that he had nothing to do with any of this, because all of this has played out exactly the way I would have guessed and forecasted it would work out.
Yeah, along those lines, here's another text. Good morning, guys. I agree with you. But there's the reverse side to what you're talking about. Why would you fire a coach because a quarterback who's only going to be in the league for probably another year is your quarterback? In other words, why are you sacrificing what could be a good long-term head coach for a quarterback who's with you for at the most this season? He's under contract this season and next season. I guess my answer to that would be that, no disrespect to Robert Saleh, but this may sound disrespect. Robert Saleh ain't Vince Lombardi. You know what I mean? Like, they obviously viewed him as disposable. And he had a 20-36 record. And I know he got dealt a really bad hand at quarterback. I'm not just talking about Aaron Rodgers. I'm talking about Zach Wilson and Trevor Siemian and Tim Boyle and everything else. He never had a good quarterback from the time he set foot in the building there. But that's the NFL. Like, guys get dealt bad hands at quarterback, and who gets sacrificed? The head coach, you know?
Yeah,
So that part's
There's a lot about it. I mean, in one of the twists of fate that these things always seem to go down roads that you don't anticipate or expect, maybe for all the wrong reasons, this will be the right move. For whatever reason, they get the interim coach emotional bump or what have you. Who knows? But So it's weird. In one way, I respect Woody Johnson for making an aggressive move. On the other side, I just it feels like it's Aaron Rodgers, pulling the marionette strings.
Do you think Robert Saleh gets another head coaching job?
That's a great question. I think a lot of people looked at him as a guy that was more like, this is a dyed-in-the-wool defensive coordinator, and he doesn't really fit the role of head coach. I think after a few years, depending on how his defense does wherever he goes next, I think that he ends up getting another job. He's got enough he's got that Dan Campbell appeal to him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
He's got that. There's owners out there that are going to be like, yeah, this is what my team needs. They need life. They need juice. They need something like this.
Robert Saleh is a more impressive individual to me than Dan Quinn. And Dan Quinn got another job. You know, now Dan Quinn took the Falcons to a Super Bowl. So I'm not comparing resumes. I'm just comparing. They're both defensive coordinators that had a lot of success as defensive coordinators. I thought Robert Saleh did a good job last year. He finished 7-10 with Zach Wilson as his quarterback.
I think this is where I would get in debates with Jets fans trying to kind of tell them, hey, no, man, it's not that bad. I was just like, no, you're fine. Like, listen, look at this, look at that. But the problem is they've been beat down for so long. They haven't been to the playoffs since, what, 2010? They haven't had an offense that's above the 20s, I don't think in that entire duration.
Can you imagine how miserable that is to be a fan of that football team? Oh my God.
They've definitely been bottom half offensively, and I think they haven't been out of the 20. They haven't risen out of the 20s.
Wow.
And they've had defensive coaches except for Adam Gase that entire time. I think the fan base is just like, all right, enough is enough. We gotta, like, this is, so Robert Saleh takes a lot of the collateral damage, and they're not in any kind of mood to look at the positive things that he's done, that he's actually at least put respectable teams out there.
He's getting punished for all their previous relationships, right?
Yes,
you know what I mean?
Yes,
he's the girlfriend that's getting broken up with because of all the other women that have done damage to you throughout the years.
There's the other part of it, though, too, is kind of like it was with David Culley, where as a fan base, I feel like it was 90%+ of Texans fans were like, listen, no, nobody's blaming David Culley for the situation that you're in. It's just that it's also clear that David Culley is not the
guy.
Right. So maybe that's how Jets fans feel. Like, all right, listen, yeah, we get it. But it's clear after watching him for several years that he's just not the guy.
Yeah, we can do better. We can do better. I mean, that's what Woody Johnson literally said. We think we can do better. All right, Nico Collins. I don't know if the Texans can do better than Nico Collins. Can they do better than they've been doing as an offense without Nico Collins over these next four games? We will get to that coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
We'll start getting ready for the Patriots at the top of the hour, but Nico Collins is a big story today. He goes to the IR. He's going to be gone for at least four games. Take a listen. Here's D'Amico Ryans yesterday. Very first question, appropriately so, at his press conference was about losing Nico Collins to the IR.
Yeah, I'm fortunate that we'll, not have Nico. Great player, been a great player all year for us, best receiver in the league, but he'll take the time to get healthy. He'll be back for us, so encouraged by that news. He'll be back at some point this season, and it's like always in the NFL, there's always injuries that happen in our game, and it's an opportunity for other guys to step up and make the most of their opportunity. That's what the league is about. A lot of guys who have stepped in when other guys were out and made a name for themselves and, made some big plays in the league. So we're looking for the same thing for whoever it may be. Guys just owning their opportunity.
Do you expect it to be the minimum four games or could it be longer?
No, I'm not getting into all that. We'll see where we end up.
So, Nico, in thinking it through, like, look, the Texans still have Stephon Diggs and Tank Dell. Like, this is not a team that's a poverty team at wide receiver right now. The depth, obviously, is an issue because from those two guys at wide receiver, the next guy, Xavier Hutchinson or Robert Woods, depending on what they're looking for, whether it's experience or maybe, slightly more explosiveness with a younger guy. I think the thing that they miss with Nico, Seth, is there's nobody else in this roster that's like Nico Collins, like that has that big, physical, over-the-middle presence where a play for a normal receiver is designed to get you 12 yards. He gets you 17 yards because he plows over two guys in the process.
Right. Yeah, and it's also on when, teams are playing all this cover two, trying to make you just nickel and dime your way down the field. It helps a lot when every now and then you dust a team for 60 plus yards on a Nico Collins touchdown. That ends up being the difference in the game, is that you're able to get those shots. The Texans have not been able to just sustain these drives going 5 and 10 yards at a time down the field without shooting themselves in the foot or what have you, or just, you know, getting stuffed in the run game. So Nico is the antidote for a lot of that. The way I think we feel about the Texans right now offensively, and why there's frustration that they just do not feel like they're running on all cylinders. The perfect example is the fact that we'll point out to the way defenses are playing them and how it's limiting the passing game and the explosiveness of the offense, and yet Nico Collins was leading the league in receiving yardage. So, like, okay, well, it's not completely shutting it down. Thank God you've got Nico at least. Mm-hmm. Now, if there was ever a week that you gotta clean up all this stuff, you gotta stop it with the penalties. Hey, you were fine, and then all of a sudden you plopped them all down in the third quarter. And they all happened all at once, and CJ makes a couple of uncharacteristic bad plays. Yep. Two series in a row in the fourth quarter. You can't be as inconsistent as that. You now this week, I don't care if it's the best team in the league you're playing or the worst, you've gotta clean that stuff up. And maybe this will be exactly the kick in the butt that they needed to really dial in and focus and get all the other stuff right. And however much less mental bandwidth is spent on trying to get Nico those shots that have been so vital, maybe that gets focused on just running a cleaner operation.
Yeah, I just, you know, and a few more thoughts on the Nico thing. I mean, I think this is a big reason you get Diggs, is not just for what the ceiling looks like with all these guys. I think Diggs was Tank and Nico injury insurance to some degree as well, because mm-hmm. Diggs doesn't get hurt. Like, Diggs is a rock. He answers the bell every Sunday. I think this too, you know, as we're through five games, we're lauding the Texans about the value they got in Nico's contract extension. Boy, Nico's outside the top 10 now for top paid wide receivers. Boy, when he signed this, he was like sixth or seventh on the list. This thing is going to age really, really well. Maybe we should have factored that in a little bit more. Like, oh yeah, that's right. Nico missed three games last year. In that, even though it was a great season for him, he played in 15 games, but one of them was the Jets game where he was gone after the first series. So he basically missed three games last year. He missed seven games the year before. He missed three or four games his rookie year. You know, like, so, you know, and maybe unlike the marquee wide receivers that are getting 30, 32, 35 million, you got to factor in with Nico that the body of work so far, and we're here again in year four, is that the guy's probably going to miss at least 20% of the season with something, you know, and that gets factored into the price.
That's where I think when immediately, as soon as Nico is out on IR, you're thinking, okay, here's Devontae Adams, right? Look, go take a crap. I think the Devontae Adams signing was Stephon Diggs, and that's the, you know, this is exactly what they would have planned, that at some point you're going to lose, and they've already, you know, they lost Tank Dell, and you still have two guys on the field. I think the potential is, you know, we're talking about, okay, is Xavier Hutchinson probably just going to be the guy that gets more targets? It would seem so based on last week and from the preseason. But also that maybe you start to see a different version of Stephon Diggs now that he and Tank Dell are going to be the guys that you're going to try to really affect the defense by sending them deep and what have you, that Stephon Diggs might really show up. It might work out perfectly for Stephon Diggs because he could have a four-game window where, wow, he looks like a number one wide receiver,
like,
if I ever saw one.
Yeah, he looks
and
like Diggs.
He ends up getting a contract somewhere else.
The guy, you're absolutely right. The guy that has been, that I've seen since Nico got hurt in the game, and especially the last 24 hours or so since the IR thing, the guy that I've seen most Texans talking about is Tank. Like, okay, maybe now this Tank really hasn't gotten good. He's made a few plays. You know, he missed a game with a rib injury, so that's concerning. You know, Tank, not the biggest dude in the world. He's going to be getting more work now, which means he's going to be getting hit more now as well. So, I mean, that just comes with the territory. But I think I agree with what you said on Diggs. The sense I get from the fan base is they're like, okay, now it's Tank time. The Tank needs to turn it up now. Or the Texans need to involve Tank, you know, by almost by definition, they need to involve Tank more. You know, there's 10 to 12 targets available to different guys now, you know?
And then also, look, Joe Mixon didn't practice yesterday. I'm dead inside when it comes to Joe Mixon, and yet when he does return, I think it's going to make a big, big difference. Yeah. That might be the real answer. How are you going to replace Nico Collins with that huge running back? Yeah. That's how we're going to replace that's how we're going to replace Nico Collins, and maybe it'll be a more complete offense. And then you'll get even more excited about the prospect of, oh, wow, if Joe Mixon stays healthy and when Nico Collins comes back, then we're really cooking with gas.
Yep, no doubt. Antonio Pierce, the coach of the Raiders, actually talked about Devontae Adams yesterday. Devontae Adams' hamstring is still hurting him, I guess. It might miraculously heal once he gets traded somewhere, possibly.
Yeah.
Here was Antonio Pierce on Devontae Adams.
He's still a Raider. He's never not been a Raider.
Yeah, absolutely, playing a game for the Raiders.
He's still a Raider. If when he's healthy and he can play, we'll play him. He's just not healthy right now. And he's getting closer, though. That's the good part. He's working every day to get that hamstrings right. He's in the right headspace mentally. Like I said, we talked recently and had a good conversation. And he's ready to play football.
Yeah. Has he
been rehabbing here at the facility, Antonio?
Yes.
Have you seen him here?
Okay, so he's in the facility.
He is in the facility.
They named Aiden O'Connell their starting quarterback yesterday. I'm guessing that hurt Devontae Adams' hamstrings slightly more.
Ooh. I felt good, but I was walking into the facility.
It's getting better, yeah.
I was checking my timeline, and I just all of a sudden, pulled my hammy.
Weird. Yeah, it's weird. All right, Payne and Pendergast.
That felt very David Culley-like when David Culley was asked about Deshaun Watson.
I did. Yeah, you're right.
He's the starting quarterback. Deshaun Watson is the quarterback.
He is the quarterback of the Houston Texans, and that's why I'm here.
Fast forward to training camp. He is the scout team safety during walkthroughs for the Texans, and that is why he's here.
For a week until he got mad that people were filming him, and then he just stayed in the building for the rest of training camp. Remember that?
That was my fun little... one of my favorite ironic moments was the day that Deshaun looked over towards the people taking pictures and said, why y'all filming me? It's the same thing every day. And that immediately became like the viral sensation. That little soundbite. Like there's your answer, Deshaun.
Yep.
They're waiting for you to say something like that.
Yes, you should know this. You're an Instagram influencer. You're trying to cut through. All right. We head into the 8 o'clock hour. Let's start to get ready for these Patriots. They're going to be starting a rookie quarterback in Drake May. We'll hear from D'Amico Ryans on prepping for Drake May. We'll hear from Nick Caserio as well as he heads back to New England. First time in the regular season, back to New England for Nick Caserio. That is next.